Welcome to the Buckmaster Show on this Friday, the 18th of February, 2012. Hope you are having a great day and looking forward to a fantastic weekend. The weather, well, should be okay after the winds blow through today. I am Bill Buckmaster, and we thank you for choosing the Buckmaster Show. We're live Monday through Friday at noon on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. We stream the show live at buckmastershow.com and at the station's website, kvoi.com, and we have the program available for you for 24/7 anytime listening. Show is usually posted by about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on my website, buckmastershow.com, tucsoncitizen.com, and tucsonsentinel.com, all carrying the Buckmaster Show. Today's Friday Focus interview is with Nick Dronius of the Goldwater Institute, the conservative think tank based in Phoenix. If you have a question or comment, call the Buckmaster Show live line at 790-2040. The Friday Focus interview on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. A federal judge has denied a request by the city of Tombstone to repair its water supply system in the Coronado National Forest. U.S. District Court Judge Frank Zapata said that Tombstone failed to show in its lawsuit why the city should be given access without getting federal permits. Governor Jan Brewer declared a state of emergency in the town too tough to die last year after rock slides from the Monument Fire damaged a municipal water system in the Huachuca Mountains. The city has made some repairs, but officials claim the Forest Service has stifled efforts by insisting Tombstone get permission before doing anything more. The Phoenix-based Goldwater Institute, which is representing Tombstone, is appealing the decision. And joining us now on the Buckmaster Show live line from Phoenix is Nick Dronius, the director of the Goldwater Institute's Center for Constitutional Government. And joining me to question Mr. Dronius is Mark Evans, administrator of TucsonCitizen.com, and we also have Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial writer of the Arizona Daily Star, who will be joining us later in the half hour. Mr. Dronius, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. Please call me Nick.
Okay, Nick, how's it going?
it could be going better, but we have our appeal on file the same day the decision came down, and we'll be filing an emergency motion for an injunction pending appeal on Monday. And depending on how that goes, we're prepared to take this to the desk of Justice Anthony Kennedy, who rides the Ninth Circuit, as soon as we can. So this issue could be in front of the Supreme Court in a month.
Why should all Americans be following this story, Nick?
Well, essentially, the question is, what is the purpose of a state or local government if it can't protect public health and safety during a state of emergency? You know, the federal government is impeding the city of Tombstone under an ongoing declared state of emergency from restoring its municipal water system in the Huachuca Mountains. And if we've learned anything from Katrina and other natural disasters, about the worst thing you can do in responding to a state of emergency or a natural disaster is let the federal government commandeer the efforts of state and local government. And so what we hope, in the broadest sense, what this case will ultimately establish is that the sovereignty of the states and local governments means that they can act with autonomy during a state of emergency to protect public health and safety without being hampered or impeded by the federal government.
Here's Mark Evans, the administrator for TucsonCitizen.com.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks.
Can you explain Zapata's ruling a little bit more and why you think that he's wrong? Because in his ruling, he had said that the issues of there being a dire emergency in Tombstone was speculative and not supported by the facts. And then he also said that the claims that the Forest Service was resisting the town's efforts to repair the water line was untrue, that they were being fairly accommodating. So obviously you disagree with that. If you could explain that a little bit more for us.
Absolutely. First of all, we did not get a right of reply. In a very unusual order, the court ordered us to just file our motion, let the other side respond. We had no right of reply, and we had no right of oral argument. So we never had an opportunity before Judge Zapata to rebut the false claims made by the Forest Service upon which he was misled into relying upon. You know, the reality is that the Forest Service has been playing a bureaucratic game of cat and mouse because they're very sophisticated. They recognize that courts generally want to see administrative regulatory matters resolved at the administrative level. And so what they can do to avoid courts getting involved in most cases, not this case and not in constitutional cases, but in most cases, sophisticated bureaucracies can pretend never to make a final decision, to always need more information, to kind of appear to a third party who doesn't know what's actually going on, that they're being accommodating when in reality they're stopping any sort of progress. And that's exactly what the Forest Service did here. On the one hand, they say, we just need to know more plans. Well, they already approved full repair of our first spring out of 25. I mean, everything we wanted, they gave it to us within 7 days for the first spring. Now, there is no material difference between that spring and the other 24 springs that we have. And if they approved it once, it seems logical during a state of emergency that they could approve it twice or three times or five times. And we do not understand what it is that they need in terms of additional information from us to justify them giving that approval. Well, the reality is we are doing very simple repair work. This is not rocket science. We need heavy equipment and vehicles in the mountains to remove huge boulders and deep mud so that we can probe for where the springs used to be, so that we can build mini dams around those springs, catchments they're called, and then run a pipe there and bury it. This is not building a skyscraper. And the other thing that we're asking, and this has been very clear because this has already been approved on one spring out of 25, is we want to build a diversionary flume. A flume is a berm, and the reason why we want to build that flume is so if there's a flash flood while our workers are working, they don't get carried away and die. And we also happen to think it's not a bad idea to have such a berm in place because of the risk of monsoons coming and the periodic flooding that we've already seen wiping out our existing infrastructure. So, you know, the bottom line is we've been trying to do what they already approved at one spring everywhere else now for 9 months. And the Forest Service has played a game where they say, well, can you give us more information? And then in the field, they'll actually have a gun-toting official stopping us from doing anything, either permanently or for a few hours, but constantly impeding and harassing. Most recently, we tried to take a wheelbarrow into the wilderness area, a wheelbarrow with hand tools to start finishing up some work inside, which they seemed to have permitted previously. And a guy stood there with a gun on his hip saying, you can't bring the wheelbarrow in because it's mechanized.
Now this,
and it took 6 hours of wrangling with him and his superiors before they finally let us in there with a wheelbarrow. Now, see, the clever thing about that is they can tie us down every day with something like that, and because they stand down, they can try to preserve the appearance of being cooperative, when in reality, because we're in a state of emergency, every time they do that, they're threatening public health and safety. And I can address that issue unless you wanted to get a question in there.
No, and this pipeline has existed for in various forms over more than 100 years, I believe, since Tombstone's been in existence. But how much of this repair work is simply replacing what was already there and damaged by the fire and the floods, and how much of it is new and improved that would be an expansion of what existed before?
None of it would be newer, improved, except, you know, with the happenstance of the materials that we have now versus 130 years ago when it was first built. There is a question as to whether some of the 25 springs had fallen into disrepair. But the bottom line is we have a right to all 25 springs. I mean, we have a clear chain of title, one of the clearest and one of the most easily proven chains of title for anyone claiming rights that go back 130 years. We even have a letter from 1916 from the Forest Service itself acknowledging our rights. So, you know, the real issue is, do we have a right to repair more than the three springs that are currently running? And the question is unequivocally yes. We know this even from the Forest Service's own existing permit. They gave us a permit in 1962 for six springs. Now, they aren't letting us repair the three springs of the six springs that are listed there yet. In addition to what the Forest Service listed in that document, there is also some 19 other springs that are reflected on a map from 1901 that was recorded back when they were basically located and perfected under state territorial law. The rights that we have under state law and under federal law include making excavations, building flumes, running pipelines, building catchments. all of that is explicit in the rights that we have. And all we're trying to do is exactly that. We're not building the Hoover Dam. We're not putting up a skyscraper. We're running a pipe to a small catchment, and we're protecting that catchment with a berm. And in the course of doing that, we have to remove 12 feet of mud in some cases, boulders the size of Volkswagens and others. It is simply ridiculous to require us to use hand tools and horses to get that done.
Nick Dronius is with us. He's the director of the Goldwater Institute's Center for Constitutional Government. The Forest Service is saying there is no emergency. We will address that as we continue with Nick and Mark Evans from TucsonCitizen.com. After we take a break right here, this is the Buckmaster Show. We will be back talking about the showdown in Tombstone.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways. Projects underway include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson, Cold Road Extension to Sabino Canyon Road, and Speedway from Camino Seco to Houghton. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. You know the benefits of soft water, right? Softer laundry, softer skin, hair, and spot-free glasses. And once you have soft water, you can't live without it. But did you know a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy compared to a time clock water softener? Now that's efficient. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener really is the world's most efficient water softener. So put it to work in your home and start saving today. It virtually ends hard water spotting throughout your entire home, from your glasses to the shower doors. In fact, it makes all your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer too, like your dishwasher and washing machine, even your water heater. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener delivers real soft water and real savings. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
Two of the world's largest pharmaceutical giants, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, know where bio works. It works at Innovation Park in Oro Valley, one of the 10 best towns for families, according to Family Circle magazine. Bioscience and bioindustry working together at Innovation Park with 275 acres of inspiring environment ready for biodevelopment. Learn more about where bio works at innovationparkaz.com. Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for fresh and healthy pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is handcrafted using the finest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore's award-winning wood-fired pizzas, certified authentic by the world-renowned Verace Pizza Napolitana Academy, is pizza perfection. Vero Amore, North Swan at Camp Lowell, and in Marana at Dove Mountain, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com and on Facebook.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Inside Pyramid Federal Credit Union, customer service is what we do. Outside, community service is who we are. Inside, we help generations achieve their financial goals. Outside, we help those in need. We reach out to our members. We reach out to our community. Because Pyramid Federal Credit Union is passionate about one thing, people. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Nick Dronius is with us from the Goldwater Institute. He is the director of the Center for Constitutional Government. With me in studio to question Nick is Mark Evans, administrator for TucsonCitizen.com. Before the break, Nick, I was teasing the fact that the lawyers for the federal government say there's no emergency and that this is just an excuse for the town of Tombstone to build a new water supply system.
Yeah. Let me respond to that because I guess I got a bit long-winded on the other issues. Bottom line is this, is that's false. We're in wildfire season right now. The danger from not allowing Tombstone to restore fully its municipal water system could not be greater. It's greater now than it was at the beginning of this case. And that's because Tombstone has contractual obligations to supply the region with fire equipment and water to fight fires. And in fact, there has been a fire already on the Huachuca Mountains just a few days ago. And the irony is that fire requires access to a point of entry to our water system in the Huachuca Mountains. So the bottom line for us is there is no such thing as a perfect state of safety. You know, the concept of public health and safety is based on reducing unreasonable risks to lives and property. So the fact that there is unequivocally a risk of a diminishment of the amount of water that could be available for fighting wildfires, for fighting urban fires, for safe potable water within the town of Tombstone, that is a risk. It's not guaranteed that the fires are going to start. It's not guaranteed that the downtown is going to burn down or that people are going to get arsenic poisoning from their water. None of those things are guaranteed, but they're real risks. And a responsible government minimizes those risks, and instead of doing that, the Forest Service is impeding efforts by Tombstone to minimize those risks. That is a loss of public health and safety right now. It's not speculative.
Okay, here's Mark Evans now again from TucsonCitizen.com.
So you touched on this a little bit before the break, but I wanted to see if we could clarify it a little bit. So the Goldwater Institute is a nonprofit organization. It obviously relies on donations, so it has limited resources. And this is a fairly small town, only about 1,500 people in a rural part of the state. So what's in this for the Goldwater Institute? Why did you pick this particular issue to expend some of your resources in order to carry this fight? What's the larger issue at play here, do you think?
Well, the largest issue at play in this case is protecting the sovereignty, the autonomy of state and local governments to respond to natural disasters and states of emergencies, to protect public health and safety without going and asking for permission from the federal government. We believe, as a matter of constitutional principle, that if there's anything that state and local government is supposed to be doing independently and free from federal interference, it is protecting public health and safety during a state of emergency. And if we can't hold the line here in Tombstone under these circumstances, then there's no way to protect that principle anywhere else. And so as an institute that advocates limited government, enforcing dual sovereignty, meaning the protection of an independent degree of government in the states and the local government, as well as an independent degree of government in the federal government, given that that is our purpose, we could not take this case. Additionally, I mean, who doesn't like the city of Tombstone? You know, part of the challenge of public interest litigation is choosing cases that grab the attention of the public, the interests of the court. This case has it all. It has big issues in play. It has exciting facts. It has a sympathetic plaintiff. This is what public interest litigation is all about.
I'm going to change gears a little bit and talk about the fight going on or the dispute going on in Glendale with the Coyotes, which I also know you're involved with. Senator John McCain chimed in this week that chastising the Goldwater Institute a little bit for its role and kind of gumming up the works in Glendale's attempt to keep the Coyotes in town. Can you explain that issue a little bit and what Goldwater's interest is there?
Well, it's quite different than Tombstone.
Right.
You know, just let me make one point. The fact that we're representing the city of Tombstone proves we don't hate cities. We'll represent whoever's in the right from our perspective, whether it's a city or an individual or a group of individuals. And it just so happens that the city of Glendale's been in the wrong. We don't know what the current deal is, but the Arizona Constitution very clearly says that you can't give gifts of taxpayer money to private enterprise. And that is exactly what the city of Glendale tried to do to keep the Coyotes here a year ago. They tried to give the owner of Coyotes $100 million of taxpayer dollars to keep the team in town. We think that's unconstitutional. We do not want unconstitutional things happening under our watch if we have the resources to try to stop it. So we tried. Now, this new deal, we don't know any details about it. The joke of the city of Glendale is we've also been fighting a Freedom of Information Act case at the same time, and that has been like pulling teeth. I mean, we have not been able to get any, you know, recent documentation about the new deal out of Glendale, so we don't know if this new deal is going to be constitutional or not. If it were constitutional, though, you'd think they'd show us the documentation.
And one of the interests in getting that information, I think, is in the City North case, which I believe is a Goldwater case that you won, the court left the door open in these instances of these gift bans, in which if there is a net benefit to the government in these gifts of taxpayer monies to this private entity, then it is somehow okay. But you won't even know whether there is a net benefit unless you see what the terms of the deal are before the deal is announced. Is that accurate?
That's exactly the case. And so we're kind of in this awkward position where everybody wants to know our opinion of the latest deal. And we've been litigating, literally suing the city now for two and a half years trying to get Freedom of Information Act compliance. And we don't know any more than anyone else does.
You know, getting back now to the Goldwater case in Tombstone, this thing about Tombstone can, in the wilderness, the Forest Service says Tombstone folks can dig with shovels, not bulldozers, has prompted a lot of people around the country, I guess, to join in on Tombstone's side and have been saying that they're willing to come down there with shovels to help out. Is that what you're hearing?
I've heard about a shovel brigade. I haven't been organizing it. Look, something has to be done because we can't always rely on the courts getting things right. And so if they have to do that to restore public health and safety, then they have to do that. I'm skeptical whether it can be done. I actually hiked up to some of the springs a couple of weeks ago and saw just how rugged the terrain was, and not only how rugged it was, but how amazingly buried so much of what had been spring sites and pipelines is now. I mean, we're talking, you know, probably boulders weighing a ton or more. I don't know what you do with shovels to tackle that problem. You know, one of the things that I emphasize here is there are access roads, old access roads, go back probably as long as the pipeline, that are right adjacent to where the pipeline used to run, where the spring catchments are. So when folks think of these motorized vehicles, these backhoes and dump trucks or whatever else moving in there, it's not that they're just kind of going to run over the wilderness and just kind of run down trees. They can drive up this kind of rough access road, kind of like what you do when you see 4x4 guys going out on these roads, and they can be within 50 to 100 yards of the area that they need to work, and they can sort of maneuver from that vantage point into the area where they need to work, doing minimal damage to what wasn't already destroyed in the Monument Fire. So one of the most interesting things about this case is we expected that there would be an onslaught of environmental interests or ecological concerns that would justify the Forest Service's behavior, and none of that has come to pass. In the response to our briefings, they just kind of had this wave-your-hand thing, well, you know, there might be spotted owls and the damage has been done. There was no evidence put in response to our motion about anything happening in the ecology there, and that's because there is no functioning ecological system right now. It's a disaster. It's like being on the moon in some places. And so one of the things to emphasize about this case is it isn't necessarily even a fight with, you know, environmental interests. This is simply a power play by the federal government. They do not want a political subdivision of the state to have a free hand in what they perceive to be their domain. And what they fail to realize is that the Constitution guarantees the ability of state and local government to protect public health and safety, particularly during a state of emergency, particularly with respect to their own property.
The wilderness issue is one of the things that has come up in this, and that the federal government has a duty or an interest in protecting the wilderness area. And that raised the question to me, is that the wilderness area is subsequent to the pipeline. Why is there not some sort of grandfather clause issue in here, and that this pipeline is grandfathered in and can do these things?
Quick answer.
Since the wilderness area was created subsequent to the pipeline.
I've got about 30 seconds, Nick, quickly.
Short answer is there is. And the court ignored those grandfathering clauses. I don't know why.
Nick Dronius, thank you very much, director of the Goldwater Institute's Center for Constitutional Government, talking about the showdown in Tombstone. Nick, thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot.
In Washington. Mark Zuckerberg says it's an important milestone for Facebook with its shares trading publicly today for the first time, but he says it isn't Facebook's mission to be a public company. Its mission, he says, is to make the world more open and connected. Shares have been trading just a little bit higher than the opening price of $38 this afternoon. Jurors deliberating in the John Edwards campaign corruption trial are asking to see several exhibits, and they say they need office supplies to help with their discussions. Word that there'll be no verdict today. The judge at the Roger Clemens perjury trial in Washington is trying to speed things up a bit. Once the pitcher's chief accuser, Brian McNamee, leaves the stand, the judge is setting a time limit on all future witnesses. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow down about 58. More details at srnnews.com.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Noble Hops Gastro Pub is for people who revere their beer and their food. Noble Hops specializes in high-quality, delicious food and offers an impressive, ever-changing selection of handcrafted beers from around the world with more than 24 on tap. Noble Hops, a pub for foodies at the southeast corner of La Canada and Lambert in Oro Valley, and always on the web at noblehopspub.com and on Facebook.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030 The Voice, our home station for the Buckmaster Show, where we have been, 2 weeks from upcoming June 1st. We will be here on KVOI for 1 year. Time for our Friday Reporters Roundtable featuring local journalists who sound off on the week's top stories. Joining me on the Friday Roundtable in studio, Mark Evans, administrator of TucsonCitizen.com, and Sarah Garrett-Gasson, editorial writer for the Arizona Daily Star, joins us on the Buckmaster Show live line from Phoenix, where she is taking care of some business. Sarah and Mark, how are both of you today?
Great.
Fine, thank you.
Oh, good. And we welcome you to join in the conversation, our listeners, anytime on the Buckmaster Show live line, 790-2040, the Reporters Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show, presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com. Well, Mark and Sarah, early voting has now begun for the CD8 special election coming up here in a few weeks in June. There were two events scheduled. One of them was the television debate this week. And then, of course, coming up Wednesday night, the Arizona Daily Star and the Jewish Community Center are sponsoring a live event in front of an audience, that which should be very interesting. KVOI and KVOI.com will be carrying that event from 7 to 9. Sarah, I heard the head of the Civility Institute speaking today on a radio show, and he was talking about how civil the television event went. Well, I think the real test, Sarah, will be Wednesday night, because being civil in a kind of sterile TV studio environment is a lot different than getting before 500 or 600 fans of each of the opponents.
Right, and it's always different when there's a live audience who will be wanting to react to what the different candidates say, you know, both pro and con. But what we want to make sure is that people know that we're trying to keep this as organized and informative as possible. So we're really going to be encouraging people to, you know, hold their applause till the end, make sure, you know, no shouting, boos, anything like that, because the whole point is we want to be able to hear what all the candidates have to say. It's not that, you know, we don't want people to have their opinions. Of course we do. But we also want to make sure that everyone can hear what's going on and that the different candidates get to make their point. One other thing I want to mention and stress while we're talking about this is the debate is going to be Wednesday at the JCC on River, a central location, which is great. And we at the Arizona Daily Star definitely appreciate their cooperation and partnership with us. We want to make sure, though, that people understand that you can't arrive there before 6 p.m. The parking situation, you know, they have childcare, different activities, things like that. So their regular users and their members will be clearing out as the debate folks begin coming in. So, and they're not going to let people camp out, you know, for the day to try to be the first in line. So it's really important that please don't arrive before 6 p.m. because there's little kids in the parking lot, things like that, as daycare, people get picked up. So we just want to emphasize that it's not a camp out opportunity, because they just won't let people stay on the property.
Mark, how did you think the debate on TV went?
I think they all pretty much stuck to their talking points up to the point towards the end where they started calling each other liars, which I enjoyed quite a bit. I always believe that, you know, rather than couch your disagreements in some sort of flowery language, just call it the way you see it. So, but I've had a hard time getting all that enthusiastic about this election. Primarily because it's a sideshow to the main show, which is coming in November, which is the CD2 race. That's really who's going to be representing, you know, half of Tucson and Cochise County in the Congress for the next 2 years. Whoever gets elected next month in June is only really going to be a congressperson for a couple of months, because Congress adjourns in August so that all the congressmen can go home and start campaigning. Yeah, there might be a lame duck session after the November election. So, yes, you know, whoever gets elected will have the opportunity to cast some votes there. But I just think there's way too much money being spent on this election when the one that really matters is the CD2 race coming up in 6 months.
But you understand that, of course, the reason that the money is going into this is whoever wins will feel, at least anyway, they have a leg up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there you can call yourself an incumbent. I mean, there's it's really interesting if you're really into inside baseball as it comes to politics is, you know, if Jesse Kelly wins, he still might have to face Martha McSally in a primary in a couple months later. And she did much better than people expected her to do in the previous primary. She came in second to Kelly. And, in fact, she carried the day on the day of the election. The people who actually went to the polls that day, she got the most votes, whereas Kelly got the most votes from early balloting. So it just showed that she didn't have the campaign infrastructure up and running yet in order to have that get-out-the-vote effort. She's now had several months to establish that. So it could be possible Kelly could win this election and lose in the primary. If Kelly doesn't win, then we've probably heard the last of him. He's a two-time loser. I just don't see him getting out of the primary after that. So there's a lot of, you know, inside baseball politics in this, and yeah, I guess you can think that it's important, but really what it comes down to is the CD2 race, and I don't know how much benefit winning this race will give you in that coming race, especially since the district lines change fairly significantly for Tucson. And completely moderates that district and wipes out the Republican advantage.
Sarah, it is a very regardless of what Mark's saying, I think it is. I think it's very important, and I think there are a lot of, from what I'm hearing, a lot of undecided voters. So I think the event Wednesday, not only because you and I are involved in it, I'll be the MC, and you're with the star. But we do believe it is an important event and an important election.
I have to agree with you. With all due respect to Mark, I don't see it. It's not the first time we've disagreed. It probably won't be the last. But I see it, and I think the public sees it as, yes, these are two separate campaigns, but really it's one long haul. And the players may change, and depending on who wins in the first election in June and the special election going into the one in November, but there's going to be no break. It's not like, special election's over, now we'd all take, you know, a month off and then start again. It's one continuous campaign season. So I think, like Mark, however, like you were saying, that Martha McSally, if she decides to give Jesse Kelly a primary challenge in the November election, whether he is the person who ultimately wins the special election or not, that's going to be very interesting because she's been out and about and doing community events and introducing herself to voters and doing everything that a candidate building a name recognition and reputation would be doing at this point. So I think that is something very interesting that we're going to see unfold.
And I think a Democratic insider told me this information this week that if Ron Barber loses by a point or two, they're still going to feel very good about the situation because they feel with Ron Barber under the newly conformed CD2 boundaries that the Democrats would have an advantage under that situation.
Right. The portion of CD8 that is cut off and is and given, I think, to CD4 is a Republican bastion. It's Saddlebrook, it's Oro Valley, it's parts of Casas Adobes. Mm-hmm. And the parts that have retained are more moderate Republicans, a lot of independents. And so the way the new district, whereas the CD8 breaks to the Republicans, they've got a 10 or 12 point advantage. The CD2 rate, the CD2 registration is dead even. It's the Republicans have like a half a percentage more than Democrats, but more importantly, neither side only has about a 1 point percentage more than independents. It is the most statistically balanced district of the 9 districts that were created by the Redistricting Commission, and I think that's going to have quite a moderating effect on whoever ultimately wins the CD2 race.
You're listening to the Reporters Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show, and this portion of our program is brought to you by Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American Western art. Adobe House Antiques, it's worth it just to drop by to look at the beautiful Jostler-designed building at 2700 North Campbell. Adobe House Antiques, 325-9439. Very disappointed to learn, Sarah Garrett-Gasson, that it looks like our postal processing center will be closed after all. And again, Mark is going to disagree with us about that. He doesn't think it's a big deal. I love getting the mail in a timely manner. As you know, Sarah, I'm very traditional, old school, and I think it's just another loss for Tucson to Phoenix.
Well, I think it is, and I have to say that the congressional delegation, Roe Verhalva in particular, really went to bat and tried to keep the mail processing center in Tucson open, but ultimately the Postal Service decided that they were going to close it and send all of our mail to Phoenix. I don't have personally a lot of, you know, there's a lot of folks who are like, well, I just really like getting the postmark with Tucson or whatever, and now our mail's going to be postmarked Phoenix. I don't put much stock in that, but there are, I mean, that's not a reason to keep something going that's losing money, but there are people, I think it's about 150 jobs, give or take some there, that will be affected and lost. There will be effects to business because mail will be a day or two slower getting around from, you know, up I-10, sorted, and then back down. So it's the kind of thing that you don't really think about, but then once you start, like, unraveling the big ball of twine, there are a lot of chain reaction things that come from losing a postal sorting center, which is what we're going to be losing at Cherrybelle.
Mark Evans, you think it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, I don't. It's, you know, to clarify my position, I do think that the mail serves an extremely important function in our economy, as well as in our culture, and that it is important that we have mail service, regular mail service, 5 days a week, maybe even only 3 days a week if it's necessary, if you know, as electronic communication becomes more and more prevalent. So, given the option of having the Postal Service collapse under its own weight and having chaos, or it reforming its operation, becoming much more streamlined, creating these hubs and these regional hubs that save money and then preserve the post office function, I prefer that. And if that means closing the Tucson branch, the Tucson Processing Center, and moving it up to Phoenix, when on balance, the issues that it might cause locally are fairly minor. You know, I'm on the side of the post office on this. I don't, other than the 150 people are going to be out of a job, that's a bummer. But overall, in terms of all the rest of us, I don't think we'll really notice. And I don't think it's going to have all that great an effect. It's not going to be all that deleterious to Tucson. And so I'm on the side of the post office with this. Do what you need to do to make your operation efficient.
Sarah, we've talked a lot about TUSD over the last few years that we have worked together on the Friday Roundtable. You had an editorial in The Star, TUSD board, right to add another call to the audience. Give us your thoughts on this editorial that appeared Wednesday in The Star.
Yeah, what TUSD was doing as anyone who has been to a TUSD board meeting knows, they can go pretty darn late. So part of the issue that the board was discussing was that there are staff members who have to stay till the end of the meeting because, you know, items that they are pertinent to come up before the board and they need to be available to answer questions. And board meetings can go till 11 o'clock at night. With some regularity. So the issue that they were talking about is how do we keep the meetings on track as possible, and is it the best idea to add a call to the audience, which is the bureaucratic language for when you get the part in a meeting when members of the public get to come up and say what they want to. They get to address the board. As a whole, the board can't respond, but it's a way people use to, you know, voice complaints, give praise, bring up concerns. So the TUSB governing board has always had a call to the audience on the first meeting of the month where they do, it's their general meeting. And then they have a second meeting on the, I think, the second Tuesday of the month, where I might be off on that. But it's just called a special meeting, and they don't have a call to the audience there. So what the board was deciding is, should we add one? Should people be able to talk about whatever they want, or should it be limited to the items on the agenda? I can totally empathize with people who are stuck at these meetings. They're long. They can be somewhat tedious. And if you have to get up and run to school the next day, that can be difficult. But when it came down to it, it's a matter of these are public meetings. They're doing the public's business. And we are, at the STAR, firm believers that the public needs every opportunity possible to address elected officials, especially in a situation where they are all together as a board. Okay. And hear the same thing.
Okay, Sarah Garrett-Guess and Mark Evans, thank you very much. Both of you have a great weekend.
You're welcome. And Sarah's right.
Sarah's right. Thank you. All right. Let's find out what's going on with the weekend. That's coming up next.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with more than a dozen projects underway, including the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has ongoing support of expanded SunTran, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel around our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Even the highest efficiency washing machine won't make your laundry soft and bright if you have hard water. It's the same for your dishwasher with spotted glasses. So why not call the Culligan man? Culligan now has a high-efficiency water softener that virtually eliminates hard water problems throughout your entire home. Your laundry is brighter and softer, glasses and shower doors are spot-free, and soaps and detergents last longer. Plus, it saves you up to 46% in water, salt, and energy. So if you're looking for ways to end hard water problems and save money around the house, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener works wonders. In fact, it makes all of your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer. Thanks to Culligan, 100% satisfaction guarantee, your future, your home, and your laundry are guaranteed to be brighter. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan. Better water, pure and simple.
With 275 acres of stunning environment, Innovation Park in Oro Valley is ready for development. Already, two of the world's largest pharmaceuticals, Roche's Ventana Medical Systems and Sanofi, are settled in Innovation Park. Innovation Park, a great place to do business in Oro Valley, named one of the 10 best towns for families by Family Circle magazine. Find out more at innovationparkaz.com.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
It's time for the world famous weekend watch on the Buckmaster Show with the culinary cruiser himself. He's always cruising for a good meal on the weekend, Matt Russell. And Matt, happy anniversary to you. In honor of your 21st wedding anniversary, I understand that you have commissioned a special T-shirt with which reproduces a beautiful black and white photograph of you and your lovely bride. The hair you're sporting there in that shot 21 years ago. And I know that you wore that special T-shirt to the office today.
Well, you know, Bill, hair is the operative word, because while many of my friends, as they age, their hair turns to a lovely gray, mine just falls out, Bill. I mean, I would kill for gray hair, but, you know, I've got 9 locks of hair on my head, and I'm very proud of each and every one of them. I have a name for each of them, as a matter of fact.
So much to do this weekend on your anniversary. In fact, you could really start it all off with a happy hour, couldn't you?
Absolutely. You know, there's so many great happy hours here in Tucson. My happy hour pick of the week is Jasper Neighborhood Restaurant and Bar on the southeast corner of Skyline and Campbell. Now, Bill, there's a reason I chose Jasper for the happy hour pick of the week. They had the longest happy hour in Tucson, which runs Tuesdays through Saturdays from 2 to 7 p.m. Now, that means that happy hour starts in just about an hour, Bill Buckmaster. So check out these specials, all for $5, a beautiful half-pound burger, calamari, spinach empanadas, chorizo flatbreads, and some great drink specials on delicious cocktails and craft beer. Happy hour today at Jasper's on Skyline and Campbell.
Oh, sounds so good, and I'll take that burger medium rare, just a slight bit on the pink side. But did I hear you right? The happy hour actually begins at 2 in the afternoon?
2 to 7 Tuesdays through Saturdays. This is the great place to celebrate happy hour in Tucson.
How about if I want some crawfish, man?
Oh, man, now we're talking. You know, Bill, we don't see many crawfish in the middle of the Sonoran Desert.
No.
They'll be clawing their way into town tomorrow for the 4th annual Crawfish Festival. Now, the party's going to kick off tomorrow at noon at Our Lady of Lavang Parish, which is on 800 South Tucson Boulevard, and it's continue all day on Sunday. Admission to this crustacean celebration is free, and the crawfish is going to be sold at only $7.50 per pound. Now, there's a special way to eat these beauties, and I'm sure the pros will be on hand to demonstrate. But either way, Bill, you better don that commemorative Buckmaster bib for this event. I think I'm in for about 5 pounds. What do you think about yourself?
Yeah, I think you could probably count me in for at least 5, and then probably another 4 pounds to go home with.
That's what I'm talking about.
Arizona Restaurant Week, my goodness, what a great organization that we have so many wonderful restaurants in this area.
Really is a huge week for foodies, Bill, and all those who celebrate Tucson as the culinary capital of the Western United States. So Arizona Restaurant Week officially starts tomorrow, and more than 20 local restaurants are jumping in. So for the next week, Bill, these restaurants are going to be featuring 3-course meals, all for under $40 a person. In fact, in many cases, under $30 a person. A list of all the participating restaurants, along with their special menus, are going to be found at ArizonaRestaurantWeek.com. Now, my personal pick is the Flying V at Lowe's Ventana Canyon Resort, because they put together an awesome 3-course meal featuring their famous barbecue ribs, which I think are some of the very best in town. ArizonaRestaurantWeek.com for all the information.
All right. Have a great anniversary weekend, Matt. Always a pleasure, sir.
Thanks so much, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show is made possible in part by our friends at Flowers Rieger and Associates Certified Public Accountants. Drop by and say hello to Michael C. Flowers. We think he's the best CPA in town. 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, on behalf of our little team, our producer, Rosemary Brandt. I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and a safe weekend, and we will be back with you on Monday at 12:04 on the Buckmaster Show and the home of the Buckmaster Show, AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. Have yourself a great weekend.
KVOI Cortero Tucson and 930 KAPR Douglas, The Voice, Good News Radio Network.